Hello, we're back. We're here to talk NBA draft. In today's show, we're going to be looking at Alexei Pokusevski, Devin Vassell, and many more. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. As I said today, we're looking at the NBA draft with PD Webb. We're going to be talking about Devin Vassell, Alexei Pokusevski, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, Sadiq Bey, and Cassius Stanley in today's show. But before we get into that, and before we talk to PD about these players, a couple of things that I need to mention. Number one, I've got a Discord server. My son decided, Dad, it'd be a good idea if you had a Discord server. I went, fair enough, let's try it. And he set it up, and I think it's working pretty well at the moment. You can go over, join there. There is a separate private channel on there for anyone who's a Patreon supporter. So if you're a Patreon supporter, you can have a private chat. But otherwise, it's just bringing a place together for fantasy basketball people to chat, bounce things off each other. I'll be jumping in and out and talking about things and answering questions on there as well. If you want to get the link to the Discord server, it's in the description of this video below, or it's in the show notes for the podcast, or you can find it on my Twitter page. It's all over the place. So join up that Discord server. Let's get a whole bunch of guys in there and get some really good chatter going about the NBA and about fantasy basketball. The second thing is, if you guys could, I would really appreciate if you could throw a vote in for Locked On Fantasy Basketball in the Australian Podcast Awards. There's going to be a link again in the description and in the show notes. The website is australianpodcastawards.com/vote. It's the listener's choice vote. All you do is type in Locked On Fantasy Basketball. You'll see it appear. You click it, you add your details, and then they'll send you an email. And then you go into your email and you have to confirm the vote to make sure that you're not a robot. I think I came fifth in this award last year. I'd really love to get out there and win it. So if you guys could go and throw a vote onto the podcast, it would be much appreciated. Again, the links to that are in the description. The third thing is, unfortunately, and I tweeted this out last week, unfortunately, this year, I'm not going to be running the Red Rock Leagues. I had about 80 leagues, I think, last year, and we raised about $4,000 for charity with those leagues, as well as having prize money for winners. But setting up that many leagues, trying to run them, approve trades, set up drafts, deal with problems in them, it's too much. And with this compressed off-season and with the amount of work that I'm doing at the moment, it's just too hard to give the required time to that. But two guys who are the big listeners of this podcast, big fans of Basketball Monster, but they've got their own massive setup here called Fantasy Basketball International. Brendan and Matt over there are doing fantastic work, and they are committed to being setting up draft-only leagues, redraft leagues, dynasty leagues, the best leagues that you can find. Heaps of people that listen to this podcast are already in there. I suggest if you are looking for a league, and that was part of the idea with my leagues, is provide really competitive leagues for people who wanted to go up against people who love fantasy basketball, and that is exactly what Matt and Brendan have started over at FBI. So, again, there's going to be a link in this. You can go and check out Matt, you would have heard me talk about on this podcast quite a bit. He's at NBA Dynasty ADP when we talk about dynasty values. Brendan's over there at Hidden Upside on Twitter, so you can follow those guys. They've got links in their tweets, but also it'll be in the description and it'll be in the show notes to give your details, and then they can find you a league over there at Fantasy Basketball International. Fantastic thing to do. It's going to replace my leagues. These guys are taking on the influx of people coming from my leagues because, again, I don't have the time to set up 80 plus leagues that I did last season. So this is going to be what fills in that hole for you.
Giggity.
So, Discord server, voting for the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast in the Australian Podcast Awards and joining up to Fantasy Basketball International to find yourself some fantastic leagues to play in this year. That's all that stuff. Now, hey, let's talk to PD Webb. All right, let's bring him in. PD Webb, welcome to the show for the first time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so as everyone knows with these shows, what we're doing is looking at draft prospects. So I asked everybody who's coming on, two players they're higher on than consensus, two players they're lower on, then we chuck a couple of other guys in there as well. And PD, one of the guys that you want to talk about that you're higher on than others is someone we talked about last week, and that is Devin Vassell of Florida State, the 6'7 wings, 20 years of age. I'll start off with this question that I threw to the draft dummies last week when I spoke to them. What the hell do you make of that video of his shooting form?
I would say that it's a regrettable decision to allow cameras into a workout. But I think on the whole, it's a much larger deal than, or it's a much less of a deal than what it was made.
Okay, so you know, we've seen issues with guys like Markel Fultz try to tweak his shooting style. We've seen it with McCall Bridges as well. He started to get that shot to go back in after a disappointing rookie season with his shooting. Why do you think it's less of a deal than it's being made out to be?
I think that the foundations that Vassell has, being a 40% three-point shooter in both of his college seasons, on a pretty good make and on a pretty good attempt percentage, and with a large amount of versatility within those three-point attempts, I think that he's going to have issues taking like volleyball line jumpers. So, you know, the really deep ones that we see Trey or Steph take. But that's not essential for the role that he'll play at the next level. So while it's going to be important for him to add the functional strength that underlies the shooting issue from range, I don't think that it's a make or break skill for him within his archetype.
Now, when I've spoken about Vassell in the past on the show, there is, I think it's one person, maybe there's multiple people who say it, but I always say, hey, he looks 6'7", but I worry a little bit about his strength and his weight. He's listed at 194. And this guy said, look, don't worry about that strength. I think he's still pretty ripped at that size. How do you see his weight, you know, to height ratio? Is he strong enough to take on these wings? I'm still concerned, despite this commenter who keeps telling me not to be concerned. Where are you fitting with his strength and his weight?
So I see Vassell as the type of wing that is best at covering number two options, yep. Because his true value is off ball as a defender. So if you are hoping that Vassell is the sort of wing stopper, his area of concern is adding strength to his core, which is essential for dislodging guys and beating them to spots and not having any sort of tipping. If he were, you know, much longer, I think that the strength wouldn't be much of a concern. But as a guy with a smaller wingspan and less mass, there is some concern about his weight. But he brings so much value off ball that if you let him guard number two.
Are you there, Petey? I think you might have dropped out.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. In terms of, you know, I asked this question, but I want to hear your take on this one. When we look at players and their three-point ability, it's often bandied about that free throw percentage can be a better indicator of future NBA three-point success than three-point percentage. And Vassell's three-point percentage is 42% over almost 170 attempts in 2 years of college. His free throw numbers are less impressive. He's at 72% on only 93 attempts. So how do you view the free throw percentage is more important than three-point percentage argument? And does that give you worries with Vassell?
I think my larger worry with Vassell and his free throw attempts is the volume of them.
Yep.
It is difficult to look at a guy and see his ability to create for himself and others when his free throw rate is around 22, where ideally you want that in the mid to high 30s. So I think that his free throw shooting isn't really the red herring that it may appear to be, considering how good of a three-point shooter he is. He has good touch, but not great touch. But the idea that he is a bad shooter because he struggles to get to the free throw line enough to balance out his percentages, I think he's probably a better free throw shooter than the numbers suggest, just because there's so few attempts, it's more susceptible to noise, where there's so many three-point attempts that it's sort of normalized a bit.
Yeah, so under 100 free throw attempts is obviously a really, really small amount for 2 years of play, or really, you know, 1 year as a starter and another year as a reserve. So you're right, that is not a number that is necessarily stable at that area. Now, you said that you're higher on him than others. He's been mocked at any point really from 5. I've seen him at 12 or 13. Like, where are you looking for him to be selected in this draft?
I think that my approach is a little different than other people because I'm so heavy on fit.
Yep.
So I think that the Timberwolves should strongly consider taking Vassell at 1.
Okay.
And that's not necessarily a indictment of his talent, but more of the talent of others. So players like Anthony Edwards or LaMelo Ball, are a bit recursive in their abilities with what the Timberwolves already have, and that the proper asset allocation would be to take a wing who raises the defensive ceiling rather than to take another bet on a creator who has overlapping skills with what they have. I think that I'm probably higher on Vassell than what other people are, and I'm also more willing to make mistakes than other people are. But in a draft with a plateau of talent, I think it's best to take a swing on fit and team upside rather than just assuming that the player with the most potential is the right decision for a front office that needs to win now.
Yeah, I can say that in this draft, given the flat nature of the draft and the lack of pointy end talent, you know, just grabbing someone who you think makes more sense when there's, you know, seven or eight guys who, in terms of overall ability or value, are similar, it does make a lot of sense, even though, you know, they're going to be people you're regressing in horror at the idea of having Vassell at number one. I understand the thought process behind that because that could be the perfect fit. And as I detailed a couple of weeks ago when I did a mock draft, you go back and look at the top five picks from every draft, there's going to be some absolute stinkers is in every single one of those. So consensus or what happens in the draft is by no means the correct five or the correct order or whatever it is. Now, interesting that you said you'd have Vassell at number one to the Timberwolves as an option. I heard a guy the other day, and I don't remember who it was exactly, that was doing his mock draft, and with a similar idea to you. You're talking about fit and how weird and how flat this draft is, and he had this next guy going at number one, which sounds wild, but he almost convinced me when I heard him talking. That is Alexei Pokusevski from Olympiakos, a 7-foot power forward who probably can't play center in the NBA given how much he weighs. We talk about Vassell's weight. 7-foot, 200 pounds. He's 18 years of age, so I think the absolute youngest player in this draft. Doesn't turn 19 until the season begins at the end of December. Pokusevski is a very interesting player, PD. I've described him as a 7-foot point guard because he's not really a big, but he's a point guard that blocks shots, that willingly takes threes, can't do anything down low, but not a bad rebounder. But the passing, the dribbling, it's audacious. I don't think there really is a player we've seen that does what he does on a court.
No, it's a very one-of-one situation, both in his game, in his body makeup, and his previous experience. I think that a lot of Americans are used to the idea that, the best players play, and that's not necessarily certain in Europe, where young guys know that they're leaving, so teams don't have as much incentive to play them.
Yep.
So Poku only played 21 minutes a game in the Greek B division, where he was massively overqualified. I think that there is a perception that it's YMCA basketball, which is unfair to the physical stature. I think that if Poku were 230 pounds, that would be an interesting idea, but he was overwhelmed by the, so he was more challenged by that than any player in this draft probably would be, just by his own skinniness. That being said, I've always called him a very good passing two guard.
Yep.
Because his shot selection is that of a guy who knows he can get whatever he wants. So he's still in the creative phase where he's figuring out what the limits of his talents are. He took half of his shots were threes. He barely got to the free throw line. Great passing numbers, great shot blocking numbers. I think that there is a bet for that he is much safer than people think because his skills that he does have are very portable. The idea that you have a great rotation defender with a nose for the ball who consistently times blocks well, who understands rotations while adding shooting is a player that is difficult to see bombing out of the league. Of course, you take a look at him and realize that he has 4 inches of neck and a huge head and, is as thin as a player you could possibly imagine. And that idea might seem weird, but when you combine the movement skills with the internal understanding of defensive rotations and of offensive passing angles, you get a player that's both interesting and potentially safe for the right team that has the ability to hide his physical development.
Yeah, I think that the right team is key for Pokusevski because, if you're putting him in spots where, hey, go and play the five and try and battle Joel Embiid, it's not going to work because he's just going to get smashed on both ends, really. But put the ball in his hands, let him create shots for himself, and he's not shy. He's going to take those shots. Like, he knows what he can do. He knows how he can see these passes, you know, behind the back, through the leg dribbles, you know, flinging out left hand, scoop passes out to the corner, just anything you could imagine, even stuff you can't imagine to see a guy that looks like this do, he will do. But the strength is a concern. Now, let's get it out of the way. He's not Kristaps Porzingis. He's not Dragan Bender, just because they're tall, skinny, white guys. That's not who he is at all. He is, again, as you said, a player that's one of one. We just don't see this sort of player, and you have to be able to put him in that right position to use what he's able to do, because he's not that typical, just stand in the corner and shoot threes, or just be there and block shots. Like, that's not who he is. I can see a scenario where he does become a top three player from this class. Could you see that? Are you that high on him?
Oh, very easily. I could see a case for him being the best player in this draft, hands down. Yeah. Because it's actually quite easy to find situations where he can develop slowly while getting usage out of him early. I think he's in a lot of ways the inverse of Anthony Edwards, who has a lot of really difficult developmental pathways and a lot of really difficult fits for what he needs. Poku's actually pretty easy. You just have to get him in a strength conditioning program, be able to play him in the G League, as well as in the NBA, find a team that is willing to let him make mistakes, and then put him next to a center who can anchor a defense, and a point guard who can limit his time on ball initially. And that's a lot of teams in the league. And I think that in calculating long-term fit and long-term developmental pathway is something that this draft needs more than anything. And that might be how my way of viewing this draft is different than other people's, is that guys who it's difficult to develop them year by year, I would fade. And if you're a team that has the specific situation for a player, you should swing, because you can get real results from developmental fit in this draft that you might not in others.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, I said that you're higher on him than consensus. It's not hard to do. I'm looking here at CBS's mock draft, for example, and I don't think he's even in the first round of Gary Parrish's mock draft, which is ridiculous when I think he could easily be a first round player. Probably even a top 10 guy. So it's not hard for you or me or many of the people who have had on this podcast to be higher on him. To have him in the second round is ludicrous to me. And to have him really outside the top 20 is bordering on GM malpractice. But I get the feeling that it may actually be what happens. Let's move on to the next guy on this list. And we're talking about guys that you're a little bit lower on than consensus. And this guy's name, it comes up quite a bit. And I don't want people to feel like we're shitting on him. So I'm going to try to be a bit more positive in my questions about Anthony Edwards. Because, when I talk about players like Killian Hayes, we talk about, hey, he's got a poor three-point percentage, but his free throws are great. And we like the way he shoots off the dribble. And then people go, well, Edwards has got a just as bad of a three-point percentage. LaMelo's got a three-point percentage. It's bad. But you shit on those guys. Edwards is poor shooting, and his poor shot selection are concerns for me. But what can you see as a best case scenario here for Edwards, or are you just I just don't see it for this guy?
I really see it, but the ideal developmental pathway is pretty hard to find, especially looking at the top section of this draft. So the biggest concern with Anthony Edwards is his feel, and with guys who are low feel, there's sort of two camps. You can be of the camp that you want to give them a ton of reps. You let them make mistakes. You take the good with the bad, and you play through it. This is sort of Trey isn't low field, but the idea is essentially the situation that Trey is in, where you just hand him all the reps and say, hey, figure it out. Like, in enough time, the talent will bear itself out with good coaching. The other one is to do the opposite, is to limit them as much as possible and teach them only good reads and not allowing the bad to happen. And, in time, you slowly give them more and more on their plate as they prove that they can balance, the good ideas of playmaking with the negatives of poor execution. And Anthony Edwards is difficult because people have tried the former, and it's very difficult to do the latter. It's difficult to take a guy who's been RSCI number one for a long time and say okay, so you're the seventh man now. We're going to play you in second lineups as we slowly figure out exactly what your limitations are and teach you offensive rewiring. basically, because at Georgia, he was allowed to do whatever he wanted, and it didn't go well. He's able to get his own numbers. He's, you know, as offensively talented as people come physically. He's capable of doing everything you could probably want out of a guy his size. The problem is that he doesn't do it consistently, and he doesn't do it with the right sort of process. So I think that when you look at Anthony Edwards, it's not what is it that this guy can or can't do. It's what situation allows him to highlight the positives of his development while minimizing both the team and individual risk of sort of an atrophy into doing whatever he feels like.
Yeah, that's the concern I have for him, is that he is so used to having the ball in his hands, but if he does that on one of these bad teams, it's not going to go well. And he had like a usage in excess of 30% last year for Georgia and still didn't average 20 points per game because the shooting and the shot selection was pretty poor, 52% true shooting overall. And the assist numbers are low. And as you mentioned, the feel is a concern. And some of what he was able to do is just through his elite athleticism and explosion and getting to the rim. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's going to be as easy for him in the NBA. So he is a guy that I am souring on quite a bit because, again, of this fit. And if you're putting too much on his plate, then it could just really go your tits up really quickly, and it's not going to look good for him. So I think if he did fall down, it probably would be the best for him, not for his ego currently, but in terms of his long-term development. In terms of defensively with Edwards, how are you there with him? Do you think he can be at least solid initially?
I think that he will be very bad initially. I think that Edwards has an insane possibility of being a defender. I've said that like the 40% outcome on Edwards defensively is like a great defensive player. The difficulty is figuring out how to teach him to like really lock in on every single possession. He's best as like a chase defender. So when he gets behind a step and guys are, you know, they're clearly going towards the basket or they are clearly working through a process, he's good at meeting them at a point. But when you give him a broad set of options to defend, he kind of just does everything equally and doesn't take away anything specifically. I think that putting him on third or fourth options and saying like, this is the scheme that you have to do, and slowly working him up to like a Jaylen Brown style defensive idea. I think that he has extremely good wing defender potential, but it's going to take a specific coach and a specific coaching style to really ingrain those habits.
Let's talk about the next guy, and that is Tyrese Haliburton, a player who, 2 years in college, point guard from Iowa State. The numbers all look fantastic when you look at them, really. 2.5 steals. He shot 43% from three over 2 years in college, over 50% from the field. He averaged almost 6.5 assists last season. But the concerns that I have, and I'm sure that they're going to mirror what you have, is that he just doesn't get to the free throw line. He can't run an offense as a primary guy. He doesn't get to the rim. He doesn't attack. He can't really generate his own shot. And while the passing is good and the three-point numbers are good, it really worries me if he's going to be able to do that at an NBA level, considering, and we talked about it earlier, he shot 71 free throws over 2 years in college. And I don't know if that's good or not, but it means he's definitely not getting to the rim. So, I think like Edwards, and tell me what you think about this, but he's situation is going to be really, really determined by fit in terms of who he plays next to. If you go, well, you're our guy now, you're our franchise point guard, I don't think it works. But if you are a player who's a secondary creator, maybe you play 24 minutes off the bench as a guy that plays with other point guards, maybe it's next to Trae Young. And then you can do some catch and shoot 3-point opportunities. You can play some defense, but not as a primary defender and not as a primary offensive guy. It works well. But if you go, well, the Knicks are going to pick me, and now you're the point guard, I think that's going to get pretty ugly.
So I agree with that. I'm just a level lower. I don't think he can be your secondary offensive guy or secondary defensive guy. I think that Haliburton is perfect for basically any situation where you would also plug in Danny Green. He's a connecting piece, but if you're looking to get top 5 or top 10 value, I would be looking at a team that already has a wing initiator, a point guard initiator, two big wing defenders, and allows Haliburton to freelance defensively and fit in where he can on offense. He's incredibly limited as a creator, struggles to put pressure on the rim, struggles to make defenses rotate. And when he had his most troubles, when teams just played him for the pass and dared him to score in college, he's never been somebody who can, he can operate out of pick and roll, but he can't create advantages out of pick and roll and make defenses respond. Once they sort of figure out the code, he doesn't have counters. And this is just his dribble limitation and his finishing limitation. I think that there is a way to get extreme value out of him, but it's also not a way that like bad teams have. Like there's not really a way for like say Cleveland to get value because they don't have any of those things. Like having good wings and having point guard initiators and having a defense that has the primary concern solved isn't generally a lottery type team. So a team looking to get to raise the ceiling is the best circumstance for him. So I can see like teams trading up to get him because he's so much more valuable to them. Where if a team asks him to do primary or secondary offensive or defensive responsibilities, he's such a specific type of player that they're going to be in the line.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, you are just a little bit lower than me on him, but yeah, I do have worries about where he ends up. Now, a couple of other guys we're going to talk about here: Sadiq Bey, a wing out of Villanova, older player, 21 years of age, 6'8". Shot, again, really well from three, 45% on over 5.5 attempts per game, average 16 points. He's being talked about as the, not necessarily prototypical, but the 3-and-D wing that everyone's looking for in good teams, Milwaukee, Dallas, these sort of teams. He's going to be a perfect fit for them. New Orleans, another option brought out there, a guy that can shoot threes, a guy that can provide defense. I am not certain. On Bay, I want to get your take on him here, but I worry a little bit about the shooting's fine, but what else can he do offensively? And I think the defense might be a little bit overstated.
Yeah, I think that a question that people need to ask when they evaluate college players is how good of a context is this for this player's game specifically? And Villanova fit like a glove for Sadiq. He basically wasn't asked to do anything he wasn't comfortable with. And if there is a team that has a similar role for him, then he could return lottery value. The challenge is on the defensive end. I'm much lower on his ability to slide his feet and guard like threes. I think that there are some fours he can, you know, handle physically, and that the foot speed and understanding of various schemes will cover. Like he's a high field player on defense, but he doesn't necessarily have the athleticism that you would want out of, you know, your big wing defenders, and he's not going to be a stocks monster in that way. So for an older guy who is a good shooter and a questionable defender, I struggle to see that as like a definite lottery player, unless a team, the passing is also like fine, but again, Villanova is such a specific spacing and a specific series of reads that his passes seem a lot more preordained when you watch all of the games back to back. Another guy who doesn't get to the free throw line as much as you want, and when facing the heightened athleticism of the NBA, that translation is expected to go down. So now we're looking at even more of a shooter. To me, this isn't a guy that I'm necessarily in love with.
Why, you might not know the answer to this, but he played just 2 years in college, yet he's going to be 22 before the NBA season finishes. He turns 22 at the beginning of April. That's quite old for a guy that played just 2 years in college. Is there any reason behind that?
I believe he did a prep year.
Okay.
In between high school and college.
Okay, there you go. There's the answer to that. So he's more like a junior than a sophomore, really.
Yes.
All right, so that makes more sense. When you're looking at the numbers, you go, well, he's so old, and he's only played 2 years. So that's what it is for Sadiq. Yeah, I think he can be I don't think I'd want to rely upon him long-term as a starter at all, but a guy that if the three-point shooting works out, fine. But there are obviously some other concerns. And the last guy we want to talk about here is a guard from Duke, Cassius Stanley, 6'6", 21 years of age. He averaged 12.5 points per game, 36% from three. He averaged just one assist per game, which is quite putrid, and the defensive numbers aren't all that great. He is another player who is old for a guy that played 1 year in college. He's 21 already and played just the one season in college. Stanley sort of seems to be in that 27 to 35 sort of range in the draft. Do you believe in him? Let's compare it because it's easy because their names are the same. Would you want Cassius Stanley or Cassius Winston?
Cassius Winston.
Okay, yeah, I think that's where I am with him as well. What role does Stanley play? Is he a shooting guard? The three-point volume is quite low. The usage was pretty low last year at Duke. I don't really understand where his position is in the NBA.
So I've always considered him a two because he's closer to 6'4 than 6'6.
Yep.
He's another guy who reclassified back in high school, so he should be a rookie this year. He would have been like 20.75 in a normal draft year.
Yep.
So again, just like an older dude for the grade. The difficulty is that when players are older, you want to see a level of dominance. And while Cassius shot okay at Duke, he was also treated as a non-shooter. So those were going to be the best quality shots he could get, and he turned out 36%. Where if you gave, you know, some other wings his shot profile, they would turn out a much higher number. And the most important thing for me when I look at guys who have high percentage is low attempts. Like Tyler Bay is similar to this, where you're just like, if you're a good shooter, you'd shoot more, right? Just, you know, the logic of wanting to have points in a basketball game. And the fact that he couldn't, you know, get above four attempts per 36 while shooting 36% is distressing. I think that he's going to be expected to be a lane runner, like sort of a lower ceiling version of what RJ Hampton provides. You know, athletic guys who are in the Oklahoma City mold of like, do a job, do it well, but don't do anything more. So I think for a, you know, a small two in rotation, he's fine. And if you're a team that just needs to get more athletic, a guy who wants to attack soft closeouts and doesn't ask for any playmaking, I think that he's fine. I would probably have him in that closer to like 50-ish range personally, just because I think there are a lot more interesting bets versus a guy like, you know, Cassius Winston, who does do one thing extraordinarily well.
Yep.
Cassius Winston is a legendary shooter from, you know, all the versatility in the world, and, you know, you're going to get the prime years quickly. So if you're a team drafting later, you want immediate value. And as Cassius Winston is, you know, even older than Cassius Stanley, you're going to have a guy who you get a lot of value on that rookie contract. And it may not really matter that you lose 2 years of prime to the years of Michigan State. I think that this is a really interesting draft for later guys. While this draft has been labeled, you know, weak and stuff, I think that the section after the lottery drop off, there's just like a flat group of 30 guys on fit and skill set, depending on what a team needs, that are tremendously interesting.
Yeah, that's, I heard, I think it was Sam Vecenie talking about this the other day, saying that, yeah, he thinks in this draft, that top-end talent isn't there, but there's probably a lot more players who end up with guaranteed contracts than there would be in a regular draft, as it, you know, spans out to, you know, 45-50 in the second round, where guys who can be solid rotation guys with some of these, you know, four-year guards or, you know, older guards, a lot like Winston, Desmond Bane, Grant Riller, those sort of players in that type of area who are going to be able to come in and contribute. And back to Stanley, look, only a 32%. Three-point attempt rate is really low for a guy that was given those opportunities and was treated that way in terms of, you know, take these shots. The fact that he didn't and only still hit him at 36% is obviously a worry. As you mentioned, PD, I reckon we'll wrap it up there talking about those guys. Thank you for coming on. Now, tell people where, A, they can find you on Twitter and your Patreon as well.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at AboveTheBreak3. I do long-form wing breakdowns along with a series on how to analyze guards quickly, so you can figure out what a guard is specifically good at and move on. And I do a series on bigs and pick and roll defense and how to evaluate which big fits into which pick and roll schema. My work is available on Patreon. It's in the link on my Twitter. All the work is free. Don't want to keep the work from anybody who may be struggling hard up for money right now. But if you do have a couple extra bucks, I'd really appreciate that. Some of these video and stats packages are not cheap.
Go and check out PD's stuff over on his Twitter and, of course, on his Patreon. It's great stuff if you are heavily into the draft. Lots of information for you to digest there. PD, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, that'll do it for today's show. Don't forget those links down in the bio, Discord server, new fantasy basketball leagues, and vote for the podcast of the year, the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube. Leave a comment. Drop it all down below. The season is kicking off. The draft is coming up. We are excited, guys. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.